Good morning and welcome to Spotlight on Industry. I'm your host, Sam Mason. This morning we begin a new series on alternative and renewable energy. We'll start right here in our own backyard by talking to John View. He's the Sustainability Coordinator at Northwest Missouri State University. The university has been using alternative fuel sources to heat its campus since 1982, and we'll learn more about that later in the show. In April, we'll explore the growth of wind energy in Northwest Missouri when we visit the Lost Creek Wind Farm in King City. And then in May, we'll head over to Brownville, Nebraska to the Cooper Nuclear Station to learn more about this still controversial topic of nuclear fission as an energy source. Some say that it's a source of renewable energy, and others will argue that point. Any way you slice it, the need for energy in the United States continues to grow, and our region is at the forefront of embracing alternatives to coal, oil, and natural gas. Stick around as we shine the spotlight on industry.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at MaryvilleMo.org. And from Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. The park features the Seacrest 18 Golf Course and the Watson 9 Executive Course opening this May. More information about Mazingo's golf offerings and tee times is available at MazingoLake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, healthcare, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org.
Welcome back to Spotlight on Industry. If you're just joining us, this month we're beginning a new series on alternative and renewable energy. With that in mind, there's no better place to start than right here at Northwest Missouri State University. In just a minute, we'll visit with the university's sustainability manager, John View. Northwest's dedication to alternative fuels was born out of necessity. Up until 1982, the school's primary source of energy to fire its boilers was natural gas, with No. 5 heating oil being its alternative. The steam generated by the boilers is what heats our buildings and supplies our hot water. Well, the winter of 1977 and 78 brought a two-week period of sub-zero temperatures to Northwest Missouri. The nation was on the heels of an energy crisis, so natural gas was in short supply. The university was deemed an interruptible customer, and its demand for natural gas was greater than the supply. As a result, the gas company shut off the supply, and the school was plunged into a deep freeze for 2 weeks until a truck with 600 pounds of heating oil could deliver the alternative fuel needed to supply the campus's energy needs. This was the tipping point the university needed to explore and plan for a new fuel source. In 1982, Northwest made the switch to wood chip-fired boilers, and they've been going strong ever since. We'll learn more about that later, but first, let's listen to my interview with John View to learn more about sustainability and alternative energy here at Northwest. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Sam. How are you?
Good. John, let's start with a simple definition, if there is a simple definition, of sustainability. What does that mean here at Northwest?
Well, sustainability in general is very broad. It's a very broad topic. But here at Northwest, our focus is energy conservation, waste management, and outreach, preparing our students for the green economy and being a part of that green economy and being environmental stewards of our area.
And so green economy, that's a new term to me. Explain that.
Well, again, green economy, years ago when people thought about sustainability or being green or, was a lot of dreadlocks and drum circles. At this point, sustainability and the green economy means energy. It means water. It means agriculture, and those are topics that, you know, have that really require attention. In a nutshell, sustainability is the ability to endure. So, making sure that today's behavior does not impede or impair our ability to survive tomorrow.
And so when did sustainability become such an area of importance here at Northwest?
Sustainability has always been important. And even dating back to 1980, that's about when the discussion began about a biofuel program. By 1982, we had converted our central boiler plant to burn wood chips. At that point, wood scrap, there was no market for it. Essentially, factories would allow their additional wood or leftover wood chips to just rot on the back 40. Some innovations came up. We had some grants from the Department of Energy. We made the conversion and we started using those wood chips as fuel. So from a sustainability standpoint, it was far less expensive to burn that scrap wood. At the beginning, the wood was free. At this point, we have suppliers and we do yearly contracts, and you know, there's of course value in those. There's pelletizing operations and all kinds of uses for wood. However, by the ton, it's still less expensive to operate our boiler plant using wood chips than it is to try to use natural gas, even as those prices continue to fall.
So prior to 1980, the boiler was fired by natural gas rather than the wood chips?
Natural gas, fuel oil. I'm not certain what year they converted from coal, but we've had several different fuels. But that fuel oil, the natural gas are the big ones. It was in 1982 when we did the conversion from wood. Now that continued. By 1992, we had identified a need, actually the community identified a need, and the state, they passed the solid waste management law in the state of Missouri, and that was the law that got rid of tires in the landfill and lead acid batteries, and, you know, those sort of things to protect our landfills. And at the same time, it set recycling goals for the state of Missouri for 40%. And the goal for the state in 1990 was 40% diversion. We saw an opportunity to give people an opportunity to not necessarily recycle in the strictest sense, but to divert their paper from the landfill. So local waste haulers, the communities, surrounding communities, the university itself, decided to start a paper pelletizing operation. We received some grants, some Department of Energy assistance, United Electric. We've got some grant money there, and we decided that because transportation, because there were no markets in our rural area for paper, that one way that we could divert from our landfill and save our landfill, which was open in the city at that time, was to begin pelletizing that paper. And we pelletized it. We adapted one of our boilers to take paper. They're larger pellets, about the size of your thumb and twice as long. Our boiler plant then uses that as a supplemental fuel to the wood chips. It's never been the only fuel that we can use, but it is helpful. We have a smaller boiler that runs off the paper pellets, and that's used in backup times when we have the other boiler shut down for service and maintenance. And it's also, we can bring that online in the colder months when we have everything cooking. Our central chiller plant and boiler plant, they support hot water and heat to the majority of campus. And so overall, it's been very economical for us to the tune of hundreds of thousands a year in comparison to heating with natural gas. The markets, of course, changed. 30 years ago, there was no market for wood chips. 25 years ago, there was no real market in this area for recycled paper. We took advantage of this fuel, you know, this fuel source for as long as we have, because it's plain economics. The savings in dollars that we realize through our energy program is that much more funding that we can put towards education, that we can focus on our mission as opposed to focusing on keeping the buildings warm. Now, statistically, worldwide, 45% of all the energy consumed on our planet goes towards heating and cooling our buildings. And so when you keep the lights on and keep the fire burning, so to speak, it's very expensive at the end of the day. Just about 10 years after the pellet process began on campus, we started researching and made some great inroads in animal waste pelletizing. What we're able to do is take pig manure from the farm, mix it with switchgrass, and use sort of the same equipment to pelletize and create an additional fuel. In 2000, the university actually held the process patent for that, for making those fuel pellets. Now, since because of the energy intensity of that process, we let our patent expire. However, we continue to try to look for ways to maximize, I guess the official way is to maximize resource outcomes. And in 2011, the university established a sustainability office out of facility services. Ostensibly, it was to begin a more formalized sustainability program on campus. Out of facility services, of course, the focus then is energy conservation, waste management, because we are a small city, and then the outreach, you know, making the connection for students especially, so that they are prepared to not only bleed green, but to be green, and to understand that sustainability is an issue that in ecology in general, taking care of our environment, something that will continue to impact industry, every type of industry, whether it be education, you know, water, energy. A lot of states now have sustainability language in their curriculum, and so the idea was, why don't we take what we're good at, which is maximizing resource outcomes in an environmentally sensible way, why don't we turn that into something that our students can benefit from.
Is Northwest leading the way in their sustainability efforts?
Northwest has been considered a leader in a lot of areas when it comes to sustainability, in that the biomass fuel system, the biomass fuel at the boiler plant, has saved an incredible amount of money, has really been an example. We have visitors still from all over the state, the country, and even the world, comes to look and see how we do it. As far as with other universities, we've taken an approach that really fits the organization. So while it might not be as formalized as the President's Climate Commitment, we are a member of ASHE, the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Ed. We try to encourage our students to participate. We have Bearcats Going Green, and those efforts have resulted in 2012, the Student Senate, the student body, elected to designate 50 cents of the capital and maintenance student fee towards the sustainability program. And that supports the sustainability office and programming towards that end. And it's resulted in advancements in our recycling program, new infrastructure, support for our recycling efforts, which are part and parcel of our pellet plant operation.
And then this, of course, is an award-winning program, correct?
Yes, the Sustainability Office. Well, and I have to be honest with you, the real star of this program is the recycling program, and recycling in its truest sense. Three out of the last 4 years, Northwest has been recognized by the state of Missouri and received the State Recycling Award. First off, based on the program where our guys, our hardscape team out of landscape and sustainability, developed a material recovery facility. Basically took material that was already here, equipment, and transformed it. We'll see that later. They transformed this equipment into a system to collect recyclables, to sort and bale recyclables. Very minimal funding. We got some grants, but these guys have really decided to make it work, and it has worked. We were also recognized for our compost program, the ultimate in recycling, where we went from, at one point, sending all of our food service scraps to the landfill, to now, we have processed well over 500,000 pounds of food service organics since 2011. It's pretty significant. We already, all of our the paper that we purchase is all recycled. We, starting in 1992, when we started the paper recycling program, you'll notice the recycling bins all over campus. We have an infrastructure in place that allows us to move forward. A lot of schools don't have that, and we're able to take those infrastructure resources, our time and dedication, especially of our recycling team, and turn those into recognitions. We participate in Recyclemania, which, by the way, a little plug, is coming up over the next 8 weeks, all through February and March, where we encourage students, faculty, staff, to try to recycle even more, to think about what they're doing. The last few years, we're trying to get back into the competitive mode. We were kicked out of the program when they decided to not allow our waste to energy paper to count as recycling. So they drew a line and they said, okay, Northwest Missouri State, you can't win anymore until you start recycling. And so we still collect paper. As a matter of fact, one of the institutions in the state, UMKC, won the entire contest last year. And we are getting back in the competitive area with cans and bottles, with different plastics and aluminum recycling.
Let's go backwards for just a second, because I'm intrigued by this 500,000 pounds of food scrap. Where does that food scrap go once it's composted? What is it used for? Do we sell that compost, or do we use it all here on campus?
It's used here on campus. As the Missouri Arboretum, we have plenty of ground that can use the compost material. Any of the building projects, any of the landscape, the larger landscape projects, they're able to incorporate the compost in. Right now, we have a pretty good stockpile of it. I will tell you that it would be very nice, and I think that there's probably a market for compost locally. I know some of the larger cities in Springfield and Columbia, even Kansas City, they have a certain time of year where you can come and pick up compost. I think we would like to do that. However, before you can package it or sell it or even give it away, you need to make sure that the mix is just right. And the mix is just right for us, but it's not necessarily just right, commercially. So at this point, We do all the processing in-house. We mix the food scrap with horse bedding. I love that word, horse bedding, from the rodeo arena. And then different scrap, tree leaf scrap from the arboretum. And at the end of it, we have a good usable compost product that we use in our greenhouse.
Let's talk about some numbers for a minute. If we look at the bottom line on some of these recycling efforts and what you mentioned earlier about converting that plant from natural gas or fuel oil to the pellets, what does that do to the bottom line for Northwest budget every year? How much money do we save every year by recycling?
Well, I will tell you, there's a couple different ways to look at it. Strictly from a revenue generating side, in 2010, what we did was we, as responsible stewards of the environment, we chose to recycle, and what we did is we had a big dumpster, and we paid an outside vendor. They came to town, we put all of our recyclers in this big dumpster, and they hauled it off and they recycled it. Now, we were paying about $300 a month to cover that hauling expense. And on occasion, we even got charged additional because if they felt it was too contaminated or wasn't quite what they wanted, they would bill us back and they would just take it to the landfill. Within a year or so of that, shortly after, you know, the beginning of 2011, we found a vendor that was willing to give us the dumpster and take everything that we had for free. No more cost. So right there, we saved some. And then it didn't take very long, a year or two, till the administration thought, if it's valuable enough that somebody's willing to set a piece of their infrastructure on our campus for nothing, then maybe we should look into doing something ourselves. Well, since 2012, we have generated enough revenue to cover our landfill expense, and it's grown. You know, it started at, you know, we made a few thousand dollars the first year, between hauling cost and, you know, the labor that goes into it. It's not really making money. It's really $3,000 in revenue, and we saved about $5,000 at the landfill, which is respectable. Last year, that number reached $26,000. And $26,000 was right about 99% of our landfill cost. So we were able to not only offset our landfill costs, which we are a small city, and unfortunately that's probably never going to go away, you know, with a large residential population. However, if you think about the revenue generated to offset the cost of the landfill, and on top of that, with $12,000 worth of diverted weight, you know, what it would have cost to landfill that again, you know, we're getting into the realm of some serious value. We're not in this to make money, but trying to find a way to minimize our impact on the environment, because we are the largest polluter, and so in this area, and so it really requires us to be the greatest stewards of the environment.
And then, of course, whatever we're saving, whether it's through recycling or through the pellet plant, as you said before, that's money that can go back into student programs, into scholarships, into other facilities, equipment. It's a trickle-down effect.
Well, and I'll tell you, the biggest advantage that plant operation and the alternative fuel program has done for us, the long-term benefit is tremendous, because Northwest, because of its history, is at the table. When there's a group at the state that is interested in alternative energy, they contact Northwest.
John, in a few minutes, we're going to get ready to take a tour of the pellet plant, the wood chipper plant, the power plant. Are there any final thoughts that you would like for our listeners to know about the sustainability programs here at Northwest?
I just shared this with a group of students at the Jefferson High School last week, FBLA career day. Sustainability is not anything new. It's a big word, and it has kind of all-encompassing. You can apply it just about to any industry, any line of business. However, every human being that has ever turned soil or had a family or, you know, from the beginning of time, there are some basic truths. You need to take care of your land. You need to take care of your water. You take care of your family and give something back. Those are basics. Now, how that applies to sustainability or how sustainability takes that idea and applies it, I try to encourage people to know that every little bit helps. So a lot of people don't remember, probably as you and I do, 25 years ago when there were streams in the state of Missouri filled with used tires. There were tire fires that burned for months. In this state, water, I grew up in an area around Washington, D.C., the Potomac River. You could not swim in the Potomac River until 1986. It was highly discouraged. And so improvements have been made, and it didn't get bad overnight. It was kind of the accumulation. So if we continue to just make that one effort in our own personal lives, then things can come around.
Well, John, thank you very much for your time this morning. We'll look forward to our tour.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
That's John View, Sustainability Coordinator at Northwest Missouri State, talking about the university's alternative fuel programs and its sustainability efforts. To give you an idea about just how far ahead of the curve Northwest was in making the switch to alternative fuels, I'll share a story John told me. Former university administrator Dr. Bob Bush was an instrumental figure in the conversion of using natural gas to wood chips back in the early 80s. Apparently, Dr. Bush was meeting with Missouri legislators in Jefferson City one time, and they asked him why the school was so intent on making the switch from gas to wood. He answered that it was a more reliable source of energy and that it would save the university X amount of dollars. Well, they said to him, "Well, Bob, why do you want to do this crazy boiler plant thing? Why do you want to burn wood? We'll always be there to pay your bills. We'll always pay your electric bill. Why are you so worried about it?" Well, it seems as though Dr. Bush and the other administrators of that era were wise enough to see right through that and know that at some point in the future, the university could not rely on the state's promise to always pay their bills. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, John will lead us on a tour of the pellet plant, and we'll also take a tour of the powerhouse where the wood chips and those pellets are converted into energy for use at Northwest Missouri State. Stick around.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at maryvillemo.org. And from Mazinga Lake Recreation Park, the park offers residents and visitors camping facilities for tents and RVs, as well as lakeside cabin rentals. Mazinga Lake also offers boating, fishing, hiking, and equestrian trails. More information about Mazinga is at mazingalake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, healthcare, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org.
Welcome back to Spotlight on Industry. If you're just joining us, we've been talking with John View, Sustainability Coordinator at Northwest Missouri State University. Specifically, we've been learning about the alternative fuels program the university has had in place since 1982. The boilers in the Northwest Powerhouse use wood chips as their primary fuel source. Those wood chips and air are fed into a combustion chamber at the bottom of the boiler. As they burn, the heat that is generated causes water in a sealed tank to boil and create steam. The steam is used to heat buildings and provide hot water throughout the campus. In the summer months, that same steam is used for air conditioning, but that's another story. We'll take a tour of the powerhouse later, but first, we want to take a closer look at yet another fuel source that John mentioned, and that is the paper pellets the university makes. In 1990, the Missouri General Assembly passed Senate Bill 530, which aimed to reduce the amount of materials going into landfills by 40%. Essentially, this was the birth of recycling in Northwest Missouri. Suddenly, people throughout the region were separating out newspapers, magazines, cardboard, paperboard, and other clean paper products to be recycled. The problem was that the closest recycling center was 100 miles from Maryville. The trash haulers were picking up these items, but it was not cost-effective to send them to the recycling center. There was a glut of paper to be recycled and no place to take it. The university conducted a study which found that it was financially feasible to turn this material into dense pellets and use them as an alternative fuel source. The investment was made to construct a building, purchase the pelletizing equipment, retrofit an old boiler to accept the pellets, and start a campus-wide recycling program. In the end, the program has been a win-win for the university and the city of Maryville. The day we visited, the finished pellets they were working on were feeding onto an existing pile that must have been at least 15 feet high and 20 feet in diameter. John started us on the tour of the pellet plant to see how it works, and while we were there, we also spoke to the machine's operator, Robert Lager. We'll hear from him in a minute, but first, let's hear from John.
We're in the grinding room. We take paper and cardboard that's dropped off by the community. We offload it with a skid loader out of our containment. And then we use our grinding equipment to turn it into the fine fluff and shredded material that we actually turn into pellets.
The pellets are about 4 inches long and half an inch in diameter. The one I examined was densely compact and extremely hard to the touch. It was mostly gray in color, but flecked with hints of brown, blue, white, and maybe even fluorescent green. Before they can grind any material into pellets, they first have to collect it. Well, his team is very resourceful, and they've come up with a better way to collect and contain the materials that are dropped off at the plant. John explains.
So a couple of years ago, what they decided to do was get rid of our traditional dumpsters that we've always had outside the paper plant, and they converted a shipping container that we're able to drive a piece of equipment into to grab and collect the paper. It's much cleaner. Even when the dumpster gets full, it's not blowing around the parking lot. And our skid loader goes right inside, uses the grappling system, and pulls it out and puts it into the piles.
The piles of paper they were working on were at least 15 feet high and ran almost the entire length of the building. They collect paper and cardboard 24/7, but there's only enough volume to run the pellet mill 3 to 4 days a week, and when they do, they'll grind up about 1,000 pounds an hour. Once they bring the paper into the building, they separate the cardboard from the white paper.
So what they'll do is they'll empty the shipping container that we have outside that serves as a drop-off point for the community. They bring it into this central location in front of the grinder, and we have it separated. We have cardboard, and then we have white paper, and then they'll do a mix. As they grind the paper, they try to keep a mix of cardboard and paper.
That mix of cardboard and paper is important. There are oils in the cardboard that help the fluffy mixture stick together. Just white paper alone will not create a pellet, nor will just cardboard. But when the mix is just right, it'll stick. Now, this machine consists of three parts: a grinder, the paper mill, and the extruder. I mentioned earlier that while we were in the plant, we met the machine's operator, Robert Lager. He's been with the university for 12 years, and he gave us a brief rundown of how the machine works.
You start with the paper and the cardboard. We put it in the grinder. It grinds it up, shreds it, goes up the conveyor, lands in our paper mill. These cross augers take it down, and the other auger takes it down, the fluff feeder feeds it into the die, and they press the pellets and it goes up the conveyor and lands on the other side. Okay.
So once it's ground up, how fine is that as it's traveling up that conveyor?
It's more like a, almost like a blow-in insulation type consistency.
And then does it get ground up more once it's up in the top of this machine?
No.
What's it get mixed with up here?
Add a little water to it. To help it go through the process, helps it go through the dye.
Just water, no other chemicals?
No. Nope.
Okay. This is kind of the business end where the dye is that correct?
Yep.
Is there a curing time that they need to solidify, or are they ready to go?
They're pretty much ready to go, but it helps if you let them set a little bit for the moisture content and they dry up.
Once the pellets have been produced and have had some time to cure, they eventually will be loaded onto a truck and sent over to the powerhouse on the other side of campus. They'll serve as an alternative to the alternative. If you're confused by that, let me put it this way. The university's primary alternative fuel source is wood chips that come from ground-up pallets or from local sawmills that are operated by the Amish or Mennonites. The backup fuel source to the wood chips are the paper pellets we saw being made. The university only uses the pellets during bitter cold spells when there is more demand for steam. Also, they need to get rid of them. Remember, they started making them because the state of Missouri mandated that cities reduce the amount of recyclable materials that was going into their landfills. After visiting the pellet plant, we took a drive over to the powerhouse to see those wood chips and paper pellets in action. The boiler operator on duty that day was Mike Stiegel, who showed us what happens to the chips and pellets once they arrive.
So our truck drivers will either dump them on the ground here in the pile, or they can pull right up to this door here, and then we'll just unload them right into this hopper. And from this hopper, we can go straight into the boiler or into our storage silo.
So this silo that everybody sees when they drive by is full of wood chips?
That's right. Usually it's full of wood chips, and it'll hold between 8 and 9 loads. So if we fill that up on Friday, that'll get us through till Monday.
Oh, that's a lot of fuel.
When we're running hard, we can run pretty close to a truckload of wood every 8 hours. So this here, you can come on in and close that door. That would be where they come out of the silo right there. So there's two augers in this bin up here, and that's what meters our fuel into where the fire is. So we can speed them up or slow them down and adjust the air. So that's how we more or less regulate it, I guess, is what we want to say. And you can see they just fall onto the floor and burn. And once a shift, we'll take this rake in there and drag that extra ash off. Then the ash just falls down in here, goes out into that dump truck, and we dump that every other day with ash. It's pretty basic operation, really.
This powerhouse is the second oldest building on campus. It contains 5 boilers, 2 wood burning, 1 pellet burning, 2 natural gas / oil burners, and a labyrinth of conveyor belts. Some of them transfer chips and pellets directly to the boilers, while others carry the materials up to the roof so they can drop into the silo. Mike showed me the firebox for one of the wood-fired boilers, but first he had to go up to the control room to close some dampers. When he opened the small door to the firebox, I could feel the heat rolling out. The fire was, of course, red hot, and we could see the wood chips burning away.
How hot is that?
Right now it's like 1,200. I mean, it'll get up to like 1,400 when it's really running good wood.
And does the outside temperature make a difference on how hot the fire needs to be?
It tells us how much steam we need to make. Like if the wind's blowing or the wind chill, all that factors in. Whether we're burning good hardwood or ground up pallets makes a difference too. Of course, the pallets are not as good as the hardwood.
So this is the firebox that we just looked at, and where's the water that it's heating?
Okay, the water that it's heating, we have a softener in the back room. It comes into this tank, the steam that doesn't get used up and gets condensate back comes into this tank, and then it'll pump into this DA tank, and from the DA tank it goes right into the boiler. That's what these pumps here all do.
So the steam that you're generating is used in what capacities across Northwest?
Hot water, heating, and in the summertime they can use it for air conditioning also.
Although the university can burn natural gas, it spends most of its time being turned off. In fact, 80 to 85% of Northwest's thermal energy needs comes from wood chips, paper pellets, or pellets made from animal waste on the R.T. Wright farm. Since the conversion to alternative fuels in 1982, the university has won numerous state and local awards recognizing its efforts to reduce and reuse. Most recently, they were recognized as one of the top energy-reducing schools in the nation. As we close out the show this month, I want to be sure to recognize the university's sustainability efforts as they pertain to recycling. In January of 2014, the state of Missouri recognized Northwest as a leader in recycling and sustainability with its 2013 Annual Recycling Award. I'd like to thank my guest this month, John View, Sustainability Coordinator at Northwest Missouri State University. I'd also like to thank Mr. Mike Stiegel, Boiler Operator in the Powerhouse, and Pellet Mill Operator Richard Lager. Join us next month as we continue our series on alternative energy when we visit with Ben Gibbons from Pattern Energy. Ben is the manager of the Lost Creek Wind Farm in DeKalb County, Missouri. He'll tell us all about the development of wind energy in Northwest Missouri. Once again, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next month as we shine the spotlight on industry.
Support for Spotlight on Industry comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, and the City of Maryville. More information on all of our sponsors is available at MarylandMO.org. Spotlight on Industry is a production of KXCV-KRNW and Northwest Missouri State University. Our editor and producer is Karen Lawrence. For more information about how your company can be featured on Spotlight on Industry, please contact Sam Mason at 660-562-1163.